Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yo, and welcome back to the Lake of Rage podcast. Surprise, it's me, Boo underscore CK, filling in for Mellow underscore Magikarp.
Where could he be?
I have a very special guest with me today. We're going to do a rundown of how he performed recently at the Portland Regional Championships. It is Mellow underscore Magikarp from the Lake of Rage podcast. How are you, Mellow?
I'm doing pretty well. So I'm excited for this one because this is one where I'm like, I don't want to talk about the freaking meta for the next 2 months. And people are like, can you at least give us the Portland recap? And I'm like, yeah, that seems like a great idea because we were both there. Yeah.
I think you posted on Twitter, what do you guys want to see? And one of the popular ones was, we saw Mellow made day two. Let's hear about it, huh?
It's so, we'll get into it, but I'm still upset at my finish. It was so bad. Yeah, I know you were watching me in one of my rounds against,
yep.
Shout out to my Tina opponent. You tried throwing and I was nice enough to throw it back to you to force the tie.
Yeah, I walked away for a little bit and came back. It's like, what happened?
It was bad. And that wasn't the only throw in day two. It was bad. But I got back to day two, which was exciting because listeners of the podcast know my preparation has been mid since having a kid at best. And it was exciting that I actually felt confident going into a tournament for once. And I feel like there were the small adjustments in prep and small adjustments in deck selection that made a pretty big difference. So we'll talk about that stuff for sure.
Absolutely. So this is episode 135. Wow. Look how far we've come, huh?
It's actually kind of wild, right? Like, bro, there's so many podcasts now. Or like people who are like, yo, check the podcast for us coming out in a couple weeks. And it's like, there's so many. Like we just got.
Yeah, it's been like three or four new ones dropped in the last week. And then walking around Portland and seeing people with the Lake of Rage t-shirt on was really cool to see.
You sure you just didn't see me a bunch of times?
Well, yeah, I saw you, but, I saw a couple, and then talking to people about the podcast is always great. So we appreciate everyone that listens and rocks the merch, especially.
Yeah, shout out to my opponent. I love when people do this. They play like they don't know who I am, which is great. I don't want people to know who I am. And then afterwards, like win or lose or tie, like, by the way, I love the podcast before walking away. It's like, oh, cool. Thanks.
All right, so do you want to hop into it here? Sorry.
No, I want you to hop into yours. I want people to hear, because people can learn from your situation.
Oh.
We tested together. We got a Limitless Tabletop Simulator. Shout out to Robin, by the way, for releasing the two-player version for the Patreon supporters. That is so good. And I understand copyright exists, and so he's not going to release it for everyone, but holy... It's good.
Super clean. Super clean. Works just like the one player. And I know a lot of people would do that where they'd open up two tabs and play against themselves.
I did.
It's basically the same thing in one tab. And you can actually still do it against yourself in one tab, which is kind of cool. But yeah, shout out to Robin and Limitless. We're both supporters on Patreon. And we recommend that if you guys have extra money to do that too, because... Robin really does put out the best stuff for the community.
Oh, for sure. And we got to keep supporting Limitless before someone buys Limitless from him and shoves their logo all over it and just destroys the beautiful independent website that we currently have working for us right now.
Yep. And we all like to go check ourselves and see our Limitless pages as Mellow has another entry.
Bro, 68th place. This is my worst IRL entry. It's so upsetting. Anyway, I'm going to try and be slightly more positive because I've heard that from listeners before that are like, bro, you have good finishes. We don't like to hear you talk down. So listeners, I hear you. I've heard you. I'm going to be more positive on it. 68th place out of almost 1,500 is like 1,490 something. is pretty darn good, actually. You know, when you think about it that way, right?
Yeah, it's huge for a West Coast regional. We'll talk about it later, but Charlotte's looking to be the biggest one ever, which seems to be something we keep saying each regional. You know, San Antonio, the biggest regional ever, and now this one's going to trump it by 400 or 500 people, maybe.
Yeah, oh my gosh. So I'm not going to Charlotte because I am not traveling past California for a regional this year. Oh my gosh, that's unreal to actually say out loud. But you will be going, so I'll share my thoughts because I've been keeping up with the meta, because I've had to keep up with the meta because of Portland. And I also toot my own horn real quick, I was pretty spot on the correct techs and the decks and things like that, because my goodness, the amount of people that were Charizard is going to be over 20%, and you know what wasn't? Charizard, because people are not that level of sheep. They're pretty sheepish, but they're not
close.
Bro, it was only 17. That is pretty far. Out of 1,500 people, that's a lot of decks.
Yeah, it's a diverse meta, though. If it was a little tighter, that'd easily be 20%. If people were there to win, everyone tried to win, I think that number would have been higher, but yeah. But let's talk about the regional itself real quick.
Oh, yeah, that's actually really important, because statistically, most of you were there. But if you weren't there, this might actually surprise you to hear. So, Grant, you kept track of the times in between rounds.
Yeah, if you guys follow me on Twitter, I think I didn't post San Antonio because I didn't play too deep in the tournament. But normally, I'll keep track of the round times. And, for example, in Peoria, the round time average from the start to the start of the next round was 79.25 minutes. Portland was 68.625.
That's,
which is
unreal.
Crazy.
That's unreal. Last year's Portland. Oh, do you have last year's Portland's number? It's different.
No.
But I want to say it was over 90 minutes. It was.
Last year's was a nightmare, right? We weren't out till
it was after 10 o'clock.
We weren't out till 10 o'clock. Yeah. This was the round nine started at 6:43.
Yeah, it's
so no lunch break, but it's amazing.
Yeah, it's unreal, the difference, because I'd walked back with one of our locals. We stayed in the same hotel, but you know, he's a high school kid. It's like, okay, I'm gonna wait for you, so we're good to go, because it was late at night, even though it was a short walk. Yeah. It's like we can't let the kids walk alone in downtown Portland at 10:30 at night. It was a miserable experience last year.
And that was in April, right?
Yeah, it was nice out. It was not cold.
Yeah. Yeah, so this was in January, the first week of January. It was cold and wet. I think for how well the event was run, the timing and location might be asking for a little bit more. If to put it in perspective, last year it was in San Diego, where it was 70 and sunny.
God, there's one so easy switch, and I know you were gonna say it, but I need to say it while on the subject.
Yeah,
LA in May and Portland in January. Just LA in January, Portland in May. Easy flip, same locations. Just please, please, a gallery games or TPCI or whoever. It's so much better that way.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I think gallery games. I'm down here in the Phoenix area now. They're from the Phoenix area.
They are.
It's like, how did you guys decide to go up to Portland in the first week of January?
It's
like,
probably cheap as heck.
That's fine. I mean, look at the numbers. Especially a Phoenix regional would be cheaper probably, or higher attended, because it's an easier airport to get to.
So I do want to say, when we had our last episode talking about after Sacramento, where we were like, we need a Phoenix regionals, a ton of people agreed in the YouTube comments. And if that's you, you know, sound off in the YouTube comments again, because I want more support for Phoenix regionals. But let's not beat a dead horse when we talked about it for like half an hour.
Or we could. I will say also on the regional, the hotels were a little bit far away from the venue, and they kept doing the weird thing where like you had to enter way down from one area versus the exit. So if you left the building, and they did a terrible job of regulating it. At one point, they had a lady there to like tell you, once you leave, you can't come back in. She was only there for like one round, but you had to walk up like 3-4 minutes up and then back down. and the hotels were so far away. So, I mean, you can't really complain about that too much. I like when the hotel's right there across the street.
Agree.
And then...
Ooh, on a related note, I booked my Vancouver hotel, and I'm staying in the convention center, whatever that one's called.
Are you the Pan Pacific?
It's going to be so worth it. It's going to be worth the money.
That's where I stay. I love that hotel. I love being right there. And hopefully you got a bay view of the harbor.
I got the cheapest one, bro. That hotel's not cheap.
It's not cheap at all. That's the one I splurge for. Like, I get a nice room. You've seen it. One time. Just looking out in the bay, they have the water planes that take off and stuff. It's just a really cool experience there. And then to be right on the venue as well is awesome. But yeah, I'm really excited for Vancouver.
Same.
A personal anecdote. I flew Alaska for the first time ever.
Hey, did your door come off?
No, but I flew on the same type of plane the same day at the same airport.
Let's go.
Yeah. So on the way back, they grounded all the flights. Mm-hmm. Like FAA grounded all that plane from Alaska in the middle of the night. So booking a new flight was just a nightmare. I get on the phone with Alaska to cancel and book with American or something. And they're like, your waiting time is 7 hours, 9 minutes.
Bro, rip.
I'm like, no, I'm all right. I'll call you next week.
You could have caught up with Doom and I on the way back to Seattle and flew out of SeaTech. You missed out.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be a fun road trip. What is it, 3-hour drive?
Yeah, it's pretty fun, actually.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's hop in real quick to my Portland experience, other than the plane, fortunate being on a different plane.
A real quick summary, because I am a teacher, just in case, because we jumped around. Best run regional been to. Yeah. So shout out to Gallery Games. Shout out to every TO who was working the hive or whatever. Or sorry, TO, a judge working the hive. Because my goodness, if every regional ran like this, I would enjoy regionals. I hated Sacramento.
I'll add this one in too. Is a stat I've been tracking now is when they announce pairings to when the round starts, averaged for 6 minutes. I think there were a couple before that were like LAIC, for example, mm-hmm. was under 4 minutes in a massive venue with a ton of people. You need time to get, you know, the entryway is always clogged, right? And as soon as people start finding out, because the announcements don't go outside. So once somebody sees the pairings are up and you're moving in, it's a, you know, the running of the bulls type mm-hmm. deal. And given, you know, 1,000 tables, or when we get down to maybe 700, mm-hmm. It's still almost impossible to find your seat and get there. I think 6 minutes is the ideal time.
That seems fine.
Yeah.
I was always in my seat. My opponent was always in their seat. Like, no one had late penalties next to me, at least.
Yeah. I saw multiple times at LAIC where people, you know, throw their hand up immediately and the opponent's standing like 2 feet away.
Heck yeah.
And this, I didn't see a single instance of that this time. I think 6 is a great number. The highest was 7, the lowest was 5. So that averages out.
Pretty good.
Perfectly run regional. No lunch, we'll note that. There was some stuff in the venue. I saw you get a pretzel at some point.
Yeah, it was fine. If I didn't like pretzels, it would have been bad, but I love pretzels, so it was fine.
Yeah. I'm usually all right with that. I normally just carry a fanny pack. I know a lot of people have backpacks, but I'm a Cliff Bar guy.
Same. Builder Bar or regular Cliff Bar?
Regular.
Okay, I'm Builder Bar. Always got the chocolate mint.
Yeah, gross. You're so weird.
No, it's
delicious.
Why
is everything just got to be a little off with you?
They're so good.
They discontinued my favorite, the peanut butter chocolate chip.
Oh, those were really good.
Yeah, that was a classic.
I'll give you that one.
So I'm just a chocolate chip guy now, which is fine. It's not even real chocolate. but yeah, I had 2 of them, and that was fine. The waters were $5. I think there was a macaroni and cheese like stand too. I saw some people with that, like brisket mac and cheese and stuff, which sounds great, but
water bottle fillers.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
That was, again,
that's huge.
Sacramento, one of the worst regional experiences I've ever had. Did not have that. So shout out to the Oregon Convention Center for ample bathrooms and water bottle fillers, in addition to food options. Did you know that Lake of Rage podcast now has merged at doomed-gaming.com, which is down below in the description? We have a shirt and sticker available to you. Use code LAKE for 10% off your first order of some Lake of Rage podcast merch. And if this sells well, we're going to add some more designs in the future. Now, on to the show.
I will say, you know, I don't know if we talk about it much, but the bathrooms get stinky fast. Usually, I always preach on Twitter, like, if somebody posts, what's the one tip or trick for regionals? I say, take care of your business before you get to the convention center. These ones got bad pretty fast as far as smell, but I didn't really see lines too much of the time.
Nah, never. And there were enough that you could just kind of keep walking. Into one and be like, nah, I'm going to go to the other one.
Yeah, and speaking of tips and tricks, I'd say go there the day before and scout the convention center.
Hmm.
There's going to be a ton of bathrooms outside of the hall that if you can find good ones, you know, less trafficked ones.
I actually didn't even know there were bathrooms in the hall until day two when I like went to time and around. And I was like, I really have to go to the bathrooms. Like, oh, they're right there. Yeah. This is so convenient.
Yeah.
I always went outside of the hall because I'm like, that's just the correct choice.
Yeah, day two is so much better for bathrooms.
There's like
except for we'll see it in Charlotte though. Now with you know a couple hundred more people.
Yeah, top 256 is almost all going to be day two. Day two, because it's about 10% conversion, right? So that should be 210 to 230 people somewhere in between there, which is nuts.
And a bunch of seniors and their parents.
That's true. And there should be 32 seniors as well, because normally it's 32 make day two.
It should be,
during the instead of the 19 match points, right? Yeah. So that's quite a few, right? And then like you mentioned, parents as well.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Oof, that's a lot of people. Anyway, let's get to your run. Right. So we tested together. We tested Charizard. But tell everyone what you played.
Yeah. Well, I played the Moon. The Roaring Moon. I've had a crush on it since it was announced.
True.
And I, you know, my brain started going to work for the first time since I created Relish. You know, the Grass Mewtwo GX deck.
Fun deck.
And just thinking of ways to play it, and you know, obviously the two engines were just the straight up Turbo and Lost. I played Lost in San Antonio, and it was a horrific experience. So I went with the Turbo build. I liked in my testing, you needed something to beat Charizard.
Mm-hmm.
And so you needed the Greninja or the Iron Hand. So I played both of them. I know Azul played it on stream that week and it was like, are you playing Azul's list? Like I've had this in my pocket for a while. Not Azul's list, even more Turbo. With the trekking shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really great. The deck ran awesome. And I played every game except for the very last game where I started Iron Hands and a bunch of item cards, which at that point didn't matter. What I miscalculated was the Charizard matchup.
Mm-hmm.
This is bad metagaming. I played four Charizards. I went 0-3-1.
It's a good sign.
Yeah, very humbling experience. Most of the games went three games.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get, you know, if they get Manaphy down, you're putting you're pigeonholed into getting the Iron Hands. If you even win the flip,
true.
You have to win the flip too, because if they go second. If they get a battle VIP pass, or they get going first, or an Arvin going second battle VIP pass, you're cooked.
That's the most impossible. Of the time.
Yeah, right. So you have to go second. You have to win the coin flip, go second.
Uh-huh.
and you have to hope they brick.
This is worse than Maraidon at this point. Like
it plays exactly the same as Maraidon.
You're just bad Maraidon.
But yeah, you're bad Maraidon, and it was brutal. Because every other, you know, even in the games against Charizard, it's like, I'm so set up, except for I didn't get the hands off. Mm-hmm. I needed like one more E-switch or something. Like, so close. The deck feels so good. Which is the same with, like, when we were talking in Discord, you're like, how'd your testing go? I'm like, Maraidon gets the hands off every time. It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's the same thing. Like, the deck is super clean. The Squawk ability is just insane.
That's such a good card. It's such a good card.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you play Research, the full dark version, like Ross played, mm-hmm. I think he got
33rd. Yeah.
33rd. Yeah.
But to be fair, it was a clean cut.
Yeah. The, there's so many ways to tech it and play it. My deck immediately after I built a new deck mm-hmm. after that. And then 2 days later I had a new one after that. I love the deck, but yeah, a good lesson in, making sure you know, like if you're metagaming and you know Charizard, we sat down mm-hmm. weeks before and we settled on Charizard and we did our numbers and had Charizard as the top deck. Mm-hmm. And you need to know that you have a good matchup into it. Like that's a matchup you can't take an auto loss because you can face four of them. Mm-hmm. And you just, you know, and you get knocked out of points right away.
Yeah, I want to give
can't make day two.
What you just mentioned of like the metagaming, we were pretty right? And Locke put, I don't know what Locke did with his spreadsheet, but Locke was like, all right, I'm going to put all the numbers in. Let me know if you disagree, right? And came back with Zard's the best play, followed by like Rapid Strike and then Snorlax. And then you decided to take the loss to the deck that we said was going to be the most popular and the deck that was apparently the best play according to what we had decided on.
I thought I had a decent matchup. Hadn't tested it enough. But I'm looking at our numbers here when we had Zard at 18%. So we were pretty close.
Yeah, that sounds.
And then we had Tina right behind it. Or Tina up to 12, maybe. So we were pretty good on the like what to play against.
Mm-hmm. And for the Charlotte listeners, we'll talk more about it, but don't expect that to change, by the way.
Yeah, right. Well, maybe. There's some new wrinkles.
Actually, that's kind of true. So yeah,
all right,
you didn't do the best because
I won four in a row in the middle when I didn't play a Charizard.
You did. We sat next to each other round what, yeah. Eight, I think it was round eight, and I was like, wow, I thought you dropped. What are you doing up
eight,
here?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was round eight. Yeah, because we'll get there. But yeah, I was like, bro, how'd you get up here? I thought you were dropping. You're like, four in a row, baby.
Yeah, I just kept winning. I mean, like I said, the deck, every game I was in it, and going first or second doesn't really matter. Obviously you want to go second against a lot of matchups.
Yeah,
because they want to go second, or you just can get the knockout. You can get two prizes, and that's, you know, reminds me of ADP. Mm-hmm. And just once we get going, it's all downhill.
Ugh.
So yeah, my last two matches, or round eight, round nine, were against Charizard. So it is what it is. But let's move on to you.
Yeah.
You played Charizard.
Yeah, and I didn't want to going into the tournament, which I think is one of the important. The people who listen to the Sacramento thing have listened to me rant about trusting your gut, right? And I think that is still true. And I'll explain why I switched to Charizard. Despite not wanting to, but it was my number one choice going in, right? And then Azul did the thing. And unfortunately, Azul's group all did well. It was like,
yeah.
I can't play Charizard. Like, it has the biggest target on its back. And then I had the week off of work. You were off and we're like, all right, let's test Charizard. So we played it into, was it like Maraidon, Judge Mew, and Giratina. and you were the Charizard player. I was the other side player, but it doesn't matter really because we're looking at each other's screens and all that stuff. Yeah. But it did help me a lot playing the other end of these decks that were going to be popular and just kind of seeing like, wow, if he gets out one singular Charizard on turn two, I don't feel good about my chances of winning these games. And that's a very low maintenance thing. Like the thoughts of, okay, I'm going to play Charizard. It's a stage two deck. Stage two decks are clunky and terrible because, oh, I have to evolve all these things. But it's like sitting across from it and just being, oh my gosh, like it really just takes one stage two early and then stabilizing with another and blah, 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 in order to feel like I have to answer these questions now. And that was super interesting to me. That definitely helped push me a little bit in the direction back to Charizard of just like playing against it and just seeing the power of 330 HP.
And having to do that three times, you know, having to go through it potentially three times or whatever, or even like 280 and a like boss up a Pidgeot or something.
Yeah, it's...
But it is... It's one of those decks where... you know when you play across something and they always have it,
Charizard.
And then you play it, but then you play it and you don't.
Yeah.
But when you play Charizard, you always have it too.
Oh yeah.
Like it's one that actually does do the thing.
And it's not even pre-Pidgeot, right? Like obviously, once they have the Pidgeot out, they always have it. But even before getting the Pidgeot out, they always have the out to the Pidgeot, like every time.
Yep.
Yeah, I absolutely love the deck even more. But I'd been in between, right? And so I'd been playing some Snorlax Pidgeot, which is the control, pretty active deck, right? You're using a lot of Luxray Fang Snipe and things like that. And I did fine. I took it to a challenge, did great. Found out Cameron Chinoy, one of our locals, who is, you know, a very decorated player, was also on the deck. And so I DM ideas. We come together on a 60, and we're like, all right, we think this idea is going to beat Giratina, which was... Hear me out, Grant. Three crushing hammers for the Giratina matchup. And so we both play it to the tabletop mock regional, right? It's like I hit Lost Zone with Minior, and then I hit Sablezard with two TM Devolutions, which is very bad for the Pidgeot in the deck, and then Giratina. And that was, I was already planning to drop at that point, but I will go 1-1-1 into them. And I'm like, this is... bad. Like I'm hoping my opponent throws a couple times with how bad these matchups really are, and some of it's pure collateral damage, like the Minior with super effective glasses. That's not actually for me, but it does work against me because they also have Raikou for the Pidgeot, right? The TM Devolution, that's a Charizard tech. Like why am I going to play a deck that's also going to get collateral damage from Charizard techs? And the Giratina is just terrible matchup. If Giratina is losing to Snorlax, you practice it more. That matchup is so hard to lose as Giratina, I promise. And I was like, okay, I cannot play this. And so I tell Cameron, right? I was like, I can't play this. This is terrible. And he's like, yeah, I think you're right. I'm probably going to switch off. And it turns out he did not switch off, by the way, if you're wondering where this story is going to go. He switched back onto it, and it was not a good not a good day in Portland for him. But I was like, all right, I got to play Charizard. And one thing that I did is I went back to my Limitless. I went back through my tournament history in general. And most of the time, I have found success. Here's, Zul doesn't listen to this podcast, but if he did, it's something he rants about all the time. You don't have play styles. Good players don't have play styles. That's probably true, but outside of my first finish with Zoroark Garbodor, the next one was Mewtwo and Mew, Tag Call Engine, right? And then
the best engine.
Limitless, I was on Pikarom, which was Volkner, Tag Call stuff. And then we came back from the pandemic, and I was on Shady Dealings, Arc Intel. And suddenly it's like, all of my successes have been with decks that I tutor. And for those who aren't familiar, I'm pretty sure tutor is a magic term. I'm not 100% on that, but tutoring is going into the deck and picking out the individual card. So instead of dump and draw, you know, research, squawk ability, stuff like that, you're saying, I'm going to Arvin for one item, and it's just going to be the one item I need, or I'm going to quick search for the one thing I need. And it's like, this is through most of my success. And even the Players' Cup stuff, right? Pikarom, kind of the same idea. in there. Relish, 100% a tutor deck. We played one draw supporter, and had I not hit two Eternatus in the last two rounds, I would have been competing for significantly higher than what I got. I mean,
Caitlin and Cynthia is a draw supporter.
Sure. Okay. There were two draw. There was one draw. No. You play a Marnie? Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Marnie. Yeah.
There was one Marnie, one Cynthia, Caitlin.
Yeah.
But yeah. I was like,
oh, okay. We can search one of them.
Sure. But that gave me extra confidence. So originally I was like, oh, I can't play Charizard again. Azul's put a target on its back, and then it was like, all right, we can play Charizard, because if I look back at all my successes, they've come with these very slow, I'm going to get the exact card I need every single turn, and we're going to do well with that. So that kind of gave me a lot of confidence into it. And then I was coming up with a 60, right? There's two very clear weaknesses with Charizard. One of them, TM Devolution. The other one was there were no switching cards. So we went with a Turo. And the Turo was actually so incredibly nuts. Like, Turo was so good to the point where I don't suggest anyone plays Turo in their deck, because I got every good use out of Turo, and none of you will ever have another good use after my weekend. Like, that card was so much better than at any business being. And then we, of course, played the TM Devolution for the Mirror, because it's like, well, my deck is weak to it, so we're going to run it. And it worked out mostly, right? I went 2-1 against Mirror. And should have been 3-0, should have got top 32 with it, but let's not get too far into that one. Yeah, the Turo, though. All right, hear me out, Grant. Turo, turn one, I started three separate games. I started a Pokemon V, Lumineon or Rotom, but also in my hand was a VIP pass, an energy, and a Turo. And being able to Turo into the Pidgey to call for family was so good three times out of the 15 rounds, which is ridiculous to have that full three card combo and starting the Pokemon V.
Yeah, and then you have Lumineon in hand for next turn.
Exactly, right? Like, it was so good.
so that was my idea, right?
Yes.
And then, but Azul's group played Switch.
Yeah.
And you'd play Turo again over Switch, you think?
So I actually lost round one to a Maridon player who made day two, as I thought it was a good matchup, but they pulled out a Coco on me in game three.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I only had one Charizard. Tech, yeah. I never set up a second Charizard in our whole set. No, that's not true. Game one, I did, and that's why I won. But games two and three, all right, here's one Charizard. Go get him, buddy. And it just plain didn't work in game two. And game three, they pulled the Coco out, and I was like, I can't. I can Turo and then Charmander. So the Switch would have won me that round. And then we're talking about a whole different tournament, right? Because I had Arvin in hand, Arvin, Switch, Retrieve, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, technically, I think Switch would have been a better card. But the amount of value I got out of the Turo was nuts. It won me my winning in like 100%. My opponent goes for the Moonlight Shuriken. I was up against Hunter Butler with the Lost Zone. Lossone, Kyogre, Groudon, Roaring Moon. Sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
the Groudon was mostly just a Lossone target the whole game. But yeah, he went for the Moonlight Shuriken on a Lumineon and something else. And then he was like, Turo the Lumineon. And, you know, there's no more win condition left on the board. And so, like, situations like that where it's like, well, this is pretty sick. It did its job. It definitely carried its weight. But Switch is better.
It has its pluses and minuses, yeah.
Yeah, going into Charlotte, I'd 100% be playing a Switch instead. I think that's just correct. But yeah, the Turo, the amount of value I got out of that was nutso. So yeah, we decided on those are the only two real changes. Otherwise, it was a completely vanilla. It was a Azul GG's 60. We made the same cut they did, cut one of the level balls, and the 60 worked. It was just a very straightforward, good deck is good type thing. And I think that's one of the things that I learned from this weekend. Everyone was ready. Every one of my opponents was like, I've tested against Charizard. They clearly knew what they were doing. And it turns out a lot of Charizard players aren't good. And I think that also made a difference.
That's the thing, right? People play the best deck.
Yeah.
They're not the best player of the best deck.
Yeah, because I would have opponents make these plays that were clearly felt like they were calculated, knew what they were doing. And then when I made a response that was maybe a little unconventional, they were suddenly like, oh, I wasn't prepped for this. I want to give a shout out to multiple Giratina players. I played against three Giratina players. Every one of them is going to think I'm calling them out because they all did the same interesting play. Let's call it that. And there was lost impact into a Charizard EX. For some reason, Cram was already KO'd or prized or whatever. So they lost impact. And I would kind of look at the field and be like, that was kind of stupid. I'm pretty sure they have a good answer in hand. I'm just going to Iono here and see what happens. And you'd Iono them, and then they couldn't actually do anything else, and they would use Star Requiem on my 280 damaged Charizard. And for anyone listening, like, wow, who would throw that hard? Look, this is also two people in day two. So apparently every single Giratina player would throw this hard. But, you know, stuff like that where they've clearly decided this is the line of, like, I'm a 280, they're going to hit me for not enough, and then I'm going to clean it up with a Sableye or whatever. I was like, this play seems really bad. Clearly, if I Iono you, you're going to whiff. And you know what? All three of them whiffed every single time.
Yeah, unless you have a bunch of energy on the bench or something to get rid of. You're normally loss zoning off of your active.
Oh, yeah. It's.
And then how are you going to find those energies again?
Yeah.
You need a rod. You need a Mirage Gate.
So, yeah, stuff like that of, like, they're very clearly making a play that they've planned out, practiced, and then you're like, well, if I make an answer to this, let's see if they can adjust on the fly. And, you know, a lot of players can't. I think that's one thing that you really have to do, and one of the reasons why I think Charizard was a good play for me, why I would play it again in Charlotte this weekend, is you do have those options, and you really can make these changes on the fly, and that just felt really good with the deck. And one reason why I'm probably going to play it to Vancouver, it could still change. It could switch to Stall again, right? It's a valid deck. Yeah, I really liked Charizard. It just really gives you so many plays. Like, attacking with Pidgeot is another one where people weren't prepared for a lot of the time of, like, oh, that thing has an attack, right? Or I had one opponent play a path going first when I started Charmander. And, you know, I'd Arvin, VIP pass, attach to the Charmander and discard the path. And they're like, oh, yeah. I was like, yeah. You know, just like these little plays of, like, there you have so many tools in your toolkit that you can really take advantage of these people who think that they have the answers. And you know what? They might, but a lot of the times they don't, because you can't have answers for every single play in the deck.
Yeah, and even the Charmander hitting into a Snorlax stall.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Charmeleon. You can knock yourself out.
Yeah.
Now the prizes have gone down. And they, you know, there's a lot of utility there with the under-evolved and even the Pidgeot, too, like you said.
Yeah, I never got to play into a Snorlax, which I'm very happy. I'd rather not. But yeah, that was one of the lines that Senor Doom and I had discussed of just, like, what if you just KO our own Charmeleons? And then we're swinging for 210, so we KO Luxray, we KO Snorlax with Charm, we KO the Rotom without a Vitality Band. You Iono them to 5 instead, and it's like, I can activate the Counter Catcher as well, because Snorlax players... Okay, look, I'm not talking to the upper echelon of Snorlax players. Cal, Hale, not talking to you. Snorlax players hate giving up prize cards.
Yep.
And they should do that. Snorlax players, please give up prizes. You need your counter catchers active. But yeah, like, oh, I'm at a penny after they've Charmeleoned into me, right? You're like, okay, now counter catchers active for me. Like, I'm in a great spot. Counter catcher Rotom, Iono to 5, KO with Charizard. Now what, right? So it's definitely one that you could beat the day one Snorlax players, to put it that way, right? And you're going to run out of steam the deeper you get in the tournament with that play, but it's a good one. And it's one that, according to Doom, his opponent was not ready for when he pulled that one out.
So, speaking of stall,
mm-hmm.
You had 5 ties
bro.
In your 15 rounds.
Yeah. Okay. No, I got a story for every single one.
Okay.
Round two. Yeah, round two was Golden Go.
Okay.
I'll take a tie.
Shouldn't be a tie.
You know what happens? I go, my opponent makes me go first. Correct, right?
Okay.
Have an okay setup. Turn two, Candyzard, KO Gimme Ghoul. All right, you got a 5 card hand, 2 Gimme Ghouls on the field. What are you going to do? They're like, all right. Bench Greninja, concealed cards. Evolve, draw 3. Irida. was it letter of encouragement? And they O-code my Charizard EX. I was like, oh god, this is terrible. This matchup's unwinnable. And so you know what? We'll take a tie in that one. That was
that's fair. Yeah.
That was Pokemon. The next tie was against Chien Pao, right?
Chien Pao, round 8.
Yeah. So my opponent, very smart player.
You're playing next to me. Yes.
We were. My opponent was a very smart player. And they just didn't play the Pokemon trading card game. They were waiting for me to evolve to two prizers, because otherwise I can't take KOs and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, huh, I'm not really sure what to do here. And so we kind of sat there staring at each other, draw passing for a couple turns. And that's how that ended up in a tie. Much to the chagrin of my opponent, because I got down paired. They messed up my record. I had won the round before. They put it as a loss. I go up to the hive and I'm like, hey, you messed this up. And they're like, oh, RB, just go play your current opponent, which for them was win, win, and you're in, lose, and you're out. And I fully admit I rejected the gentleman's agreement because I did not care. And I was not winning a gentleman's agreement into Chien Pao most of the time. So you know what? We took the tie because my opponent wanted to play a game of chicken. And I'm going to be honest, I still don't know how I'm supposed to respond to a Chien Pao who doesn't take prizes, but does set up a full board. I'm sure there's an answer, but it's pretty scary to be looking at two Frigibacks, two Bidoofs, with the Chien Pao in the active, where they're just vomiting energies into their hand every turn. Be like, I guess I have to Iono eventually and hope that it sticks.
Yeah, that's a really awkward situation. Normally, in that case, you wouldn't be, you know, 5-1-1, where you're still in command of your day two destiny.
Yeah.
And not having to deal with a gentleman's agreement for tie and out opponent, which is unfortunate for your opponent.
They were very vocally not happy.
Yeah.
They were a super cool opponent until that situation happened. And then,
I mean, I can feel for them, but like, again, like what can they do? Like, you got to start taking prizes. You know your situation too.
Yeah.
So like being down paired in general, right?
Oh yeah.
It's like, really no different, like that happens sometimes. So
yeah, it was an awkward, like, if they take one prize KOs, I KO their Chien Pao and then I win the 2-2-2 war. But also, if you're not taking prizes, it's not even that I didn't want it. Like, I wanted to win game 3, I wanted to win the game, but it was like, this is just incorrect for me to evolve to a two prizer and start taking prizes now, because I'm gonna lose the game if I do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then so you win your winning in, which surprisingly was not streamed, I think.
Was
Azul streamed round 9?
Yeah, listeners, if you were voting in Twitch chat, and why would you vote for Azul GG when you could have voted for me against Hunter Butler?
Yeah, seriously.
What was a Pokemon game for sure?
You said earlier, Hunter was playing
Kyogre Groudon.
Junk box, which I've termed any sort of loss box that just plugs in like 4 or 5 attackers or whatever. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
I mean, yeah, you have Greninja, you have Sableye, you have Cramorant, you have Kyogre. It's fine. Yeah, we did pull out the win. It's a little bit of a low probability whiff. But you know what? It turns out Pokégear can still miss, even with 4 Chorus in a 20-card deck. We take those, better to be lucky than good, right?
Yeah.
Played your outs. Yeah, and
you start day 2 off with a win over Tina.
Yep. Free matchup.
And then what happens?
And then we hit a Gardy where we tied because long game 1, game 2 they bricked, and game 3 was nowhere near finishing. You know, Gardy stuff, right? And then we hit Lawzone, where I threw so hard. All right, Charizard players, listen up. Game 2, I'm going down to 1 prize card remaining. I'm Ultra Balling to grab a Jirachi or something. I don't know. Something out of the deck. When you are Ultra Balling and you're going down to 1 prize card, you Ultra Ball away the counter catcher, not the good cards. So instead, I Ultra Ball away an Arvin. Keep the counter catcher. that will never be active. I pull two Pidgeots off the prizes that I knew they were prize. There was 100% chance I'd get them because I take two prize cards, three prizes, two Pidgeots. My opponent plays an escape rope. I promote the Pidgey. And I get stuck because I got rid of the Arvin. And I can't Arvin into Pidgeot to retreat and win the game with my Charizard. And we end up tying because my opponent rejected the gentleman's agreement, which, like, sure, at that point in the day, that's valid. Yeah, absolute grief on my end.
Yeah, it was round 12. Yeah.
Yeah, then we hit a Giratina. And again, I absolutely grief.
No, you hit a Maridon.
Oh, that's next. Right. Oh, bro, that game was so fun, though. My opponent was so sick. Like, they whiffed so many generators, but were so nice. So, David Gade, you know, shout out.
Yep.
They were super fun, and they had this really cool line. Maridon players, listen up, because I think there's something to this. I think there's something to what David did, and that was go first with the Raichu, and you're just like, all right, fast charge, attach, right? It's a double Mareep, fast charge. And then what do they do? It's like, all right, Charizard for 180. You can get the KO on the next turn with enough of a setup.
Sure.
Because the Raichu can't get KO'd. And if the Charizard player, if you actually go first into Charizard, you have fast charge, you can fast charge again and just have this gigantic Raichu wall dynamotoring, and you go knockout, knockout with the path play. And it's actually, they did take a game off of me. And we're close to winning the set just by, like, making these plays of, like, you can't KO my Raichus. And I'm just going to vomit energies and go knockout, path Iono, knockout. Do you have it again? And getting three Charizards is hard against a path deck that's able to Oko you starting on turn two. So I think it's interesting, and I think there might be something there for just the, like, hey, you're never going to get this many knockouts.
Yeah, who would have... Yeah, you don't really think about that. Normally, you know, like with a V, you know, an Arceus or something, mm-hmm. or even, like, the new stuff, like the moon, like, all right, I'm not getting KO'd going first or whatever,
yeah.
or if they attack into me first. And you play that like you played with the Chin Pal, a game of chicken.
Yeah.
And you should have the upper hand because you can pitch you out for boss or whatever. But that's pretty clever. Because nothing really on Maridon, they don't have anything under 200.
Yeah, not unless they have to squawk. And that's how I was able to win game one. Yeah. Was just,
okay,
I got the turn two boss KO on the squawk. And then I was like, all right, now what are you going to do? Because I will win this game before you do. But yeah, if they don't squawk, like, they didn't have to squawk. No, they got a Bravery Charm on their squawk on turn one in game three, and I was like, this is sketchy now.
You got the vacuum?
No, I did not get the boss vacuum at all. I just started smacking into them, and I hope they didn't have it, and they eventually did not have it, but it was really close. I had to get the third Charizard to win that game.
I'll interject one point here too for the Maridon players. If you're playing Coco, mm-hmm. don't play the Coco into the moon matchup. You put the Coco down, that gives the moon somebody it can attack.
Mm-hmm.
My opponent did that. I won it going first against a Maridon twice. So they put the Coco down. I'm like, okay. This is huge. So just jump that in there. And then round 14, you play Atena.
Yeah, this is the one you were watching. Where,
yes.
Game one, absolute domination. Actually, that's not my opponent. Shout out to Lost Zoning three Mirage Gates.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm just watching him cook. And it's like, I was in such a bad spot. Like, literally on turn two, I was like, I have one Charmander, I should scoop. And I was like, I don't know, this is Giratina, I'm sure it'll be fine. And then they go Abyss Seek. And I was like, okay, I stabilize a little more. And they Abyss Seek again. I was like, okay, this is fine. And then suddenly, next thing I know, it's like there's two energies and two Mirage Gates in the Lost Zone. Like, I'm just going to keep playing and see what they do. And eventually, they chorus and deck themselves out.
Yeah.
Because they just have nothing. And it was just, it was such a funny game because it was just like watching, it was like playing Ladder. It's like, all right, just let him cook. And it was like, y'all, this is looking sketch. And then game two, I absolutely griefed so hard. They escape rope. They're going to Greninja me. I know they're going to Greninja me. The correct play is promote the Charmander with an energy. And instead, I big brain promote a Charmander with no energy, which gets stuck in the act. Yeah. And I get utterly farmed from there. And then game three doesn't finish, because why would game three ever finish in this format? So again, I can point out, not saying I played perfectly otherwise, but a very blatant, if I make a different play, I win this game every single time. And instead, I lose it. And you know, for everyone listening to this, that happens. And you'll still think about it frequently.
But it's a learning experience, and you know that, you know, going forward at least.
Oh yeah, for sure. It goes back to reps. I do want to mention, I played locals with Charizard. I was vastly under-tested, and the next round we're going to talk about against James Sims. Shout out to Professor. I gotta give this kid credit, man. This kid was a goofy Twitch chatter and is now like a proper good Pokemon trading card game player. But yeah, like I sat down against them. This was the third time I'd ever played the Charizard mirror. The first two times were in day two, and they utterly out-mirrored me all over the place. You gotta test, you gotta play more Pokemon than what I did, and it really showed going into day two, where the games were a little tighter and just my games were a little less clean, or a little more punished, I guess, for some of those misplays. You just have to play the Pokemon trading card game. That is by far, I appreciate you listening to the podcast, but you know, turn the podcast off, go to live and play a couple games. That's the best way to prep.
Yeah, the interesting thing, I heard it in multiple games next to me when I was playing, mm-hmm. Charizard players saying, I swear to God, multiple people said it. They're like, oh, I haven't tested the mirror.
Did you sit next to me playing a mirror?
No, but like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think a lot of people are like, okay, I need to know the Tina matchup. I need to know Maridon. Yep. Yep. Like, to have it. You don't really think about the mirror. It's like, okay, what's the mirror? Okay, I'll tech Devo.
Yeah.
And that's how I'll play the mirror. It's like, at some point I'll just play Diva. Like, okay, that's not how you test the mirror. No, the matchup.
Ooh, I did though. All right. So against James, I win the coin flip, go second. Boy, you want to know how bad I threw? I double VIP pass. I have an Arvin in hand, and I just choose not to play the Arvin. for no reason. I don't know. I was such a great, like, I have the Rotom on the bench. I just hold the Arvin for no good reason, because I Rotom into another Arvin anyway. It's like, there's so much cool stuff that I could go get right now. There's so much that could have it was such a, like, why did I do this moment? But so what happened is I have the TM Devo, so I go, they get the prize trade first, right? They get a KO because they went first, blah blah blah. There is a situation where I KO their Charmeleon, and then they're down three candies, Charmeleon and Rod.
Perfect.
TM Devo, if they candy Zard, I always win by two-shotting it. And then they pull out the second Rod.
Yeah.
And I instantly see my mistake. And the second Rod evolved to Charmeleon on the bench with the candy Zard in the active, and I realize there is no winning from this situation. Outside of maybe they brick for multiple turns in a row. So that was actually a really sick, like, speaking of knowing what to do, I saw it. I saw the line four turns out. I was so ready for it. And I'm like, all right, this is it. Like, they literally cannot win the game here. And then they didn't play Azul's list. And so I lost. I lost on the spot without knowing the list. So plus one for closed deck list, I guess. That was actually super cool. I was big fan, even though I was on the wrong end of it. It was cool to get punished like that.
Yeah. It could have been second Charmeleon too, something we'd talked about.
Also true. But like, I'd seen like Justified Gloves, for example, and I had one Nest Ball, one Level Ball. And it's just like all these extra bits where I'm like, I'm pretty sure that they don't have room for these extra pieces. I was wrong, but fine.
So you lose to James.
Yeah. We got 30 second place. Shout out.
Yeah.
That was good. Winning that, in for 30 seconds.
And it was a losing out of top 64, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's so crazy. It was like win for $1,000, lose for nothing.
For nothing.
not even 18 pity packs.
For literally nothing.
Yeah. Sick format we got going on there, Pokemon. I appreciate that. And of course, the correct answer is, instead of complaining, win next time. But also, yeah. Yo, you can't give me some packs?
Yeah, that does need to be addressed. What we've seen from Pokemon is they have been responding to the bigger size and everything. We've seen it with the bigger kicker, but it's so slow to happen.
Yeah.
You know, they're not proactive, they're reactive. And that's unfortunate because, okay, let's say the next regional ends up being 800 people. Okay, that's fine then.
Mm-hmm.
It still fits fine. You can bump the pricing up. They print these card packs out. They cost a penny to make.
Yeah.
Like, give out some packs. Incentivize it. Keep growing. You know, that's what keeps the machine working. One thing I did want to talk about. You're round 14. After your first game, you got mid-game deck checked.
Yeah. I passed, by the way, for anyone wondering. I used purple dragon shields because so far, every time I've made day two, I've used purple dragon shields. Granted, I've also flopped out of tournaments with them. Superstitious, though.
First, I want to ask, did it have any effect on your game there? Because you'd just come off the win.
Yeah, I had
in game one.
You know how awkward it is to have to talk to your opponent? My opponent was a super cool guy.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. But just like I have to make small talk now.
Yeah, I hate small talk, so yeah.
No, I don't think so. I think I would have played the exact same way regardless. Yeah, I don't think my mental was changed at all. Like making a blatant misplay in addition to probably some other small ones, I think that might just be who I was Sunday at 2 p.m. after 13 rounds of Pokemon.
Do you know why they do them mid-round? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, so one of the reasons for doing it mid-round is to keep the tournament going, right? If they only take a couple minutes, and a lot of the times the games don't go to time anyway, Giratina versus Charizard, maybe not the best one to not go to time. But it keeps the tournament going versus in between rounds is like, okay, well, now we have to stop something and things like that. So I'm pretty sure that's why they do in between rounds. They have less time sitting around doing nothing in between rounds. And then it's less likely to delay the tournament in any way, shape, or form.
Well, from my observation, there were three judges there on the side. Two of them, like that, they were doing the normal judging.
Yeah.
And then between rounds, they took your, or between matches or games, they took your decks and the two judges went away. There's only one judge there on that end, which was weird. But also, I think you're at the end of it, at the end of your game, they started the round right after. You were the last one, maybe.
Yeah. So the reason we were the last one is my opponent got a slow play penalty and they gave us a time extension. And then for some reason, they still picked us for a deck check. So we got another time extension on top of that.
Yeah.
And then my opponent, game three, going first, played a Colress, looked at the top card of their deck. And so we had to get another time extension for the judge to go confirm that it would be a two prize penalty. So we got three time extensions off of our game.
So barring those, I think in general, I think the better way to handle it would be at the end of the round, take the decks when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you can go, you know, to the bathroom, get water, do whatever, and go pick up your deck, you know, 6 minutes later and the round starts.
Yeah.
I think it's just an inconvenience because now you immediately have to get up and sit back down.
Oh, heck. Any judges, let us know. Tweet
at
RealBooCK.
I'd love to hear why. Yeah. I'd love to hear why. Because I've had it happen in the middle of the round multiple times now. And it's, you know, just an inconvenience. Like at the end of the round, just take my deck. If you find something wrong, you shouldn't, because I play katanas and I've never had an issue with them.
Hey, I've never had an issue with dragon shields.
I've made all my day twos. I've made with turquoise katanas.
And for any sleeve companies listening, after I said, hey, I'm looking for a sponsor who's more reliable than Dragon Shields, and you're like, now this guy's talking about Dragon Shields, because none of y'all sponsored us. So I went back to Old Faithful. So that's on you. I ain't going to talk about you no more till you hit me up at @mellow_Magikarp on Twitter.
Yeah, judges talk to me. sleeves talk to Mellow, please. Or talk to me. Shout out Ultimate Guard. Okay, so I'm thinking maybe that's the reason you lost round 15, but, you know, who knows? Not being able to take a little walk, you know, maybe grab another pretzel.
No, that's pretzel wouldn't want me to game. No chance.
Maybe.
I did grief so hard that whole... I learned how to play the mirror match now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm more confident going into Vancouver. But by then, it might be too late also, to be honest. Yeah. Like, everyone's going to know the mirror match by then.
Yeah, it's only 10 weeks away.
Speaking of 10 weeks away, Charlotte's coming up.
That's right. That's this weekend.
Yeah.
We're recording this Sunday night. I'm flying out bright and early on Friday to Charlotte, a 4-hour direct flight. I've got a window seat.
Let's go.
Yeah.
I'm an aisle man myself.
Make my peeps. Yeah. I'm aisle. Yeah. The windows, I actually changed my flight. So I'm getting up at like 5 a.m. to fly.
Worth it.
Because I gotta make my little peas when I'm flying.
Of course. Getting old out there, folks.
Yeah. What do you think about the meta?
I'd play Charizard again. I think, like I mentioned, I don't think people are fully aware of what good players playing Charizard looks like. And that's why Azul and Grant and Caleb went on a fun adventure on the last one, but the same idea. Caleb keep doing so well with Charizard, and they might just do it again. Like, I don't think I'd be the least bit shocked for that to happen, right? But like, I think there is a clear difference, and I think a lot of people don't realize that there's a lot of decisions with Charizard beyond evolve and attack. Like, there is a lot of building up for the next few turns. And for anyone listening to this too, I think realize it is a complex deck, and that means you should try it more than you might be, because you get really rewarded for making plays 3-4 turns in advance. And other decks like Lost Zone, that is also true. Problem is, you also get punished really hard for Lost Zone by simply existing. And so I think some of these Lost Zone players really need to go to a deck that has way less decisions but still rewards that decision making process, like a Charizard. Or, I mean, Gardy's a trap, don't play Gardy, but I think Giratina is also a good choice. But I'd play Charizard again. I want to sell everyone who is trained on it, you should be playing Charizard for sure. And if you're not, if you're trained on Giratina, I also think that's a really, really good choice, which is words I never thought I'd say.
Yeah, you're trying to sell people with 5 days to go. Well, if you're really well trained.
Yeah, I mean, if you're like between a deck and I see no reason to switch off of Charizard or Giratina moving forward, because you're just deciding your 59th and 60th card at this point, because the deck itself is so powerful. If you are a good player playing it, you can see turns ahead. You can see prize maps on turn one. You can see your sequencing and your resources that are necessary every single turn. I don't see a reason you would ever switch off of either of these two decks.
You can grab any card you want with Pidgeot.
Yep.
If you haven't used your four Sealstone, potentially you have another. You can grab two of any cards you want. That's crazy.
Let's be honest. Four Sealstone almost always grabs the piece to grab the Pidgeot.
Yeah, like, right. Yeah.
But yeah.
Playing the moon, it was awesome. You either play the stone on the first turn or the last turn.
Yeah, get that moss.
It's like, okay, I put the stone on. There's checkmate.
Going back to Charizard. Charizard players, keep the switching card in for sure, I think, this weekend. I don't think Maridon players are going to switch off of the Tapu Koko. I don't think Palkia players are going to take out the Articuno. I don't think DTE Mew might not add Mawile back in. Like, I think there's just a lot of stuff. And I don't think you'll ever be upset that Switch is in your deck. Unless you cut, like, an Arvin for it. Don't be stupid, but having a Switch card is, I think, just a good card for sure to keep going into this weekend, because I don't expect people to stop worrying about Charizard playing zero switching cards.
Yeah, so we only had one Charizard in the top eight.
Yep.
So do you think that affects the meta at all? You know, people might just see, oh, it was Azul again. Oh, you know, he's obviously one of the best players playing right now.
Some would say.
It, arguably, potentially. There's a lot of Mew, though.
Yeah.
Mew's a good matchup for you, right?
Yes, but like, you can still lose. It's Judge Path is. Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Judge Path box is pretty scary. Like I said, you add that Dreepy in there. If they cut the switch card, GG's, sure. GG's.
You said Guardi's a trap. Yeah. We saw today.
Today at the time of recording, yeah.
Yeah, at the time of recording, a cash match with Jake Gearhart losing playing the Guardi in eight rounds to Isaiah Bradner.
Absolutely on the disgusting, Tina. Bro. The 3-0 Jake lead into the Bradner 5-3 win. Like, yep. Oh. And I want to point out, too, so game one seemed like it was an actual display of a game. Games two and three was just Giratina being bad. And then the games where Bradner got to play, they weren't actually blowouts because that's not really how that matchup goes, but they were blowouts, man.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. And not in the way like, oh, beat you up ugly. Yeah. It was just these games make you not want to play either deck.
I disagree. They make me want to play. Bro, watching Jake occasionally just like pass instead of taking a prize. And it's like, God, that's such a good play. Like, you know, not going down to Roxanne yet, establishing a bit more of a board, having a board so big, you're like, whatever, bro, spit on me. I don't care. It's not going to do nothing. Like, that's so cool. I love it. No, I love both of these decks. I would not play either to a regional, though.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah, what do you... Okay, so we do think an increase in Mew. Mew seems really well-positioned. Always has. And do you think the sunsetting of you know, rotation coming up, a lot of people, you know, this might be their last regional before, then let's give it one more ride.
I think anyone who thinks that is going to feel encouraged by the Portland results, right? So we saw six in the top 16... It was more than there should have been. It's like a number where you see it and you're like, that can't be true. And then you count it and you're like, oh, Mew. So Mew was a great play for Portland regionals. And here we're going to test the theory. We're going to test the Celios network theory. If people will play the deck that was the play for the last tournament, trying to catch up. It was true of Giratina in Portland. It was played in higher numbers. It was the play for San Antonio. Still a good play for Portland. Still going to be a good play for Charlotte. But Mew was a good play for Portland. And we'll see. I think Mew is going to go up because of that reason. It was a good play. Oh, it's kind of under the radar. It didn't win. It was just in top 16. So it was so close. I think people are going to sleep on Mew. They probably will. You shouldn't. Yeah. You should not sleep on Mew. Play the Spiritomb. If you're playing a deck that does that, play the Charizard and just Charizard all over their face, whatever. But I think Mew's going to see more play because I think people are going to say, I don't think they're going to expect Mew. Just expect Mew.
Yeah, and I think obviously with, like we said earlier, the Bradner win and one of his testing mates, John Ang, won Portland with Tina. And what's an easy splashable tech into Tina is the Spiritomb, right?
Yeah, definitely.
We've seen it before.
Massive for that matchup. Yeah. It turns that matchup from, I think it's Mew favored without the tomb into, it's definitely Tina favored with the tomb.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that one.
Yeah, because they'll, you know, their paths become irrelevant and you play three or four and the tomb. It's like, okay. Now what?
Right.
And then, you know, Roxanne, Path. Okay, good luck.
Oh yeah, it's
but we did see Fusion was top four. So a little bit quicker out of the gates than the DTE with the other five of the top 16.
Yeah, we saw two fusions in top 16, I believe.
I'm only seeing.
Was there only
maybe
the
it was
one?
Just misreported. Okay. Yeah. I know for sure that the top four.
I do believe Maddox said, and I know they're a co-host of the Beach Court podcast, which I have not listened to, but you should go listen to them. Probably talk about the run if you want to play Mew. But on Twitter, they said that you do in fact lose to Charizard. DTE has a chance, but not a great one. Fusion Mew loses to Zard pretty hard, but I think the other matchups in the meta are just better because you're faster. And this is purely going off of what Maddox said, because they played the deck and I didn't. But yeah, you're just faster overall. You have so many more options with the Meloetta and the Ice Q or whatever you want to play.
Yeah, I pulled up Maddox's record here and they played a Charizard in round two.
Okay.
Which they won. Their opponent was 2-4-1 drop and then tied in round 11. So only played two. So I wish I had that sort of matchup spread.
I mean, that's how you do it, right?
Like, they do, but yeah.
You take a bad matchup and you hit someone early who maybe they're not going to navigate it fully properly. That's how you do it. That's how you Urshifu and you hit an early Mew or Snorlax. You still got a chance. If it's round one, there's no say in how good that person is. You might be fine.
Yeah, your resistance might suck, but as long as you get your 19 points.
I was the last place in the 20 pointers going into day two. Meant nothing because it resets the next day. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Is there anything else on the radar? I know Makani had the Arceus.
Sure.
Whatever.
It's a deck. Shout out to Tabletop Village to Brian Myers for the day two with Arctina Venusaur VMAX. I sat next to him round seven and we were sitting on the same side of the table and it helps. I was playing one of my friends. Shout out to Matthew for this one. So it was a super chill game on my end. But Brian shows me his hand, which was a Giratina V, a Venusaur V, and like Path to the Peak, grass energy, psychic energy. And I just burst out laughing because I had no idea what he was playing. I was like, bro, who lets you at the top tables? And then, you know, he did well with it. So, I mean, Arceus is a good card.
Yeah.
Problem is Giratina does beat it most of the time. I think the Gigas is supposed to help with that matchup, but I never count out Arceus. I'm sure it's going to do fine again. Why wouldn't it?
All right, I got two more to throw at you.
Sure, sure, sure.
Obviously, one that's been around for a while, the Rapid Strike deck. That got 15th.
Yeah, good deck.
It's a thing.
Yeah, Rapid Strike's good. There's no reason not to play Rapid Strike, and there's no reason to respect Rapid Strike.
Yeah.
It's both of those. So the cool thing about Portland is it was actually made the day one graphic, right? And it did not make the day two graphic. Mew was a good play for Portland, which meant Rapid Strike was not a good play. I also think Rapid Strike is a deck where you should never switch to Rapid Strike. Victor Ong is a local, right? He is very, very good with Rapid Strike. Playing against him is significantly different than playing against anyone else with that deck. A good Rapid Strike player is leaps and bounds ahead of an average one. And so there's no reason to respect it because there's very few great Rapid Strike players. There's a lot of ones who I don't know what the difference is. They're going to take prizes early and let you Iono them, activate counter catchers so you can KO their Octillery, you know, whatever. But that's fine. I would not switch to it if I'm not a great Rapid Strike player, and I would not respect it personally because there's like two great Rapid Strike players in a 2,300 person tournament.
All right, I got we ride on whatever downhill. Okay, whatever. I got one more that there's a Snorlax we kind of touched on earlier. Okay, got it.
Yeah,
one more, a new deck.
New,
newer, I guess, new to this format. Mm-hmm. What do you think about Goldango?
Oh, I don't get why this deck isn't more successful, and I'm pretty sure it has to be because it's just not consistent enough. Like, I think it should be good. And I want to root for the deck because I know I hyped it up when we did our Paradox Rift preview. I don't see why this deck's not better, though. Like, it just seems so good. The card's good. The attack's good. Palkia can power up a Greninja, I guess. I don't know. It seems, I don't know. I legitimately don't fully understand why it's not better. And I think by the time the meta's done, it will gain respect as a viable deck. I don't want to say good. Good might be a little too strong, but a viable deck.
Yeah, maybe it's just adoption. Like, there's so many other good decks that can do that have the same or better matchup spreads, easier to play. I don't know. That why would I waste my time on something that could be just, you know, an Iona away from,
yeah,
you know, how do I take my last prize?
And I mean, and that checks out, right?
A lot, like, of decks, but
you take a good Charizard matchup, but you have to take a bad Giratina matchup. And at that point, when you're talking about the 1A and 1B most popular decks, like, why would I play this deck into that versus something else that loses to Giratina and beats Charizard, like Stahl? Like, Stahl probably just has a better matchup spread than Golden Go does.
Yeah, and then just picking it up, like, I think everyone by now has played games with Giratina. It's been out probably since Lost Origin was...
It's only been about a year and some months.
Salt Lake City last year.
How old's my son? 16? 16 months. Giratina and my son are the same age.
So, I mean, everyone's probably played it or played against it enough. Like, okay, I'll pick up Goldango next format, maybe.
Ooh, post-rotation? That's future talk. Yeah. That's future talk.
Which is exciting. You know me, I love Poro. I'm a big looking to the future guy.
One thing, too, that you served it up like softball and I didn't hit it out the park, because we talked about it on the pregame. The Bradner versus Gearheart thing. I think it shined a light on something that is another good piece of advice going into the regional. You can have a good game plan. And this goes into what I talked about, too, the Charizard thing. I guess, gosh, I served it up on a freaking silver platter, too, and completely whiffed. Man, I'm rusty. Yeah, the flowchart, like you said, a lot of times you can have a flowchart and feel very confident, and that's fine. You have to be willing to adjust from your flowchart. You cannot sit there and be like, all right, I'm going to do A, B, C, and that's how this matchup's supposed to go. Sure, supposed to is not how this format goes. Part of the reason why you keep seeing the top players do well is because this format is not a flowchart. This format is so different. You have to play the Iono that you get. You have to play the awkward starting hand with no VIP pass in a fast format. And you really have to be willing to adjust based off of what's in your opponent's discard pile. What is my board? What is their board? What's in my hand? So I think going into Charlotte, that's another important point. Why would I play Charizard? Because people follow their flow chart and you can disrupt it. What should you do if you're going in? Don't stick blindly to your flowchart. You should be constantly check your opponent's discard pile, evaluate the board, decide what is actually going to happen here. When I first started, I got coaching, and one of the things they said that still sticks out to me and I still tell everyone is, ask yourself, what doesn't my opponent want me to do this turn? That is going to take you so far in the game compared to, okay, I have to Cresselia the Giratina. And from there, I have to Iono Countercatcher, you know, blah, blah, blah. No. You're just like, all right, what doesn't my opponent want me to do? Well, they have one Comfey on the field. Cresselia the Comfey isn't normally how I draw it up, but I'm going to disrupt them even more. And this format especially, I think that just makes such a big difference. So yeah, really evaluate every single turn and don't just be like, all right, it's a altered creation boss game. Not really that level of flow charting anymore.
I wish.
I'm glad it's not. Let me make these tiny little decisions of like, actually, I'm going to pass turn. I'm a rare candy and a Pidgeot instead of rare candy Charizard and just vibe and see what happens. And then suddenly your opponent follows their flow chart. You're like, all right, sick. I can adjust now and I'm good to go and I'm happy. I've established a board.
Yeah, we saw Jake do both sides of it today.
Mm-hmm.
he would, like you said, Cresselia into Tina at times, but he did that every time. In the post game, Bradner said, "I'm really glad that he did that play and didn't KO my Comfy, because if he did that, I'm screwed." There's other nuances in that, that Bradner's like, if I put down the Manaphy, he hits into this, I have the, like, there's plays that aren't ever on the flow chart. So many things that are out there. But you can't be stubborn-headed and keep doing the same thing over and over again. You have to be in the game every time. There's no autopilot deck. Well, I mean, ride on, I guess.
That's what's crazy is it actually isn't. Like, that's what's...
Right.
Like, there's so many lines in Maraidon, and that's why, you know, Moffitt makes top eight, and everyone else in the world, you know, is nowhere near that.
Well, I mean, I remember, like, just, you can go back to any format, almost, like, where people are like, Lugia is so easy. You do this, this, this. Like, well, yeah, but there's the middle of the game, which exists for everything right now, but, like, there isn't anything that's truly oppressing like that. That you can't just stop thinking.
Yeah, and the cards like Countercatcher and Iono just exacerbate it so much, because it really turns into a, like, oh, keep it active, don't keep it active. Like, do I push my advantage? Do I not push my advantage? And, like, am I going to get punished for this? Like, what are the odds they even have the Countercatcher? Like, okay, I'm going into Giratina. I'm going to activate their Countercatcher, but not their Roxanne. Is that actually scary? Sometimes no. Sometimes you look at their hand, you look at what they did last turn, like, they didn't even play a supporter. They probably don't have Chorus. Like, the odds of them doing anything, because they didn't Abyss Seeking, right? They just hit you with a Cramorant. You're like, they're probably not going to do anything. They're probably not going to have access to this four-card combo that I'm actually afraid of. So I'm probably fine. I can probably activate it. And sometimes you look at a 12-card hand, and you're like, maybe I don't want to go into Roxanne turns because my board's not ready yet, and I'd rather do something else this turn.
Yeah, it's like, if you don't have the Sableye on the bench yet, do you want to, are you going to find it? When you Iono, how many cards do you have in deck? How quickly can you find that card again if it gets Iono'd? You know, little things like that are so important to keep track of. And you lose that sometimes. Like, you forget to play the Nest Ball and fail it to shuffle your deck to get better odds to see a card.
This is one of
the little things.
Coolest playing against Hunter Butler round 9. I think he really showed that, like, level of, and I know some people do this in their head because I'm one of those people, but playing Vossone, I would Iono him. You know, he'd look at his hand, he'd write it down, and then he would count his deck before his turn started. And he would be like, he would be very blatant, right? Like, this was my hand, this is how many are here, and then think about what he's doing. He would do it out loud, because when you're that good and you're playing a deck like Lasso, and it doesn't matter if I know what his plan is. Or maybe it did. Maybe that's why I won. I don't know. But yeah, stuff like that is just so huge.
Yeah, it's weird to see. Sometimes you play against somebody and you Iono them, or they Iono you. You Iono them. They don't look at their hand again. They just shuffle it. Like, I always take another second and make sure I know what was in my hand.
Yep.
I don't play the decks normally that get the 12, 15 cards or whatever, but, like, just knowing what's there.
Oh yeah.
And then that helps your sequencing for the next turn.
Oh yeah. And it can be huge for even a deck like Charizard, where you're like, I'm going to quick search, but I mean, am I going to evolve into the Charizard? Am I going to first play my own Iono to dig for it? Am I going to Mysterious Tail first or not? Like, even if you don't think it matters, there's a lot of situations where it does matter a whole lot.
Yeah, I've got the cards to evolve to Charizard. Wait, how many energies do I have? Do I need a quick search for Rod first or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, there's
little things.
There's a lot in this format. And yeah, the biggest thing is, don't get stuck in the flow chart. You should be evaluating each and every turn, even when you are, like I said, playing Charizard. It's very easy to play three turns ahead, and you should. You really should.
Yeah.
It's very important that you have every single resource, prize, etc. mapped out, because otherwise the deck doesn't really do a whole lot. But
thinning.
You reevaluate everything every single turn also, of like, okay, my opponent has this left, so my plan was this, but now I have to pivot over to this because it's, you know, I'm not ready to go into Roxanne turns yet. Or I haven't got my Jirachi, so I'm super not ready for Roxanne Sableye. I should probably, you know, chill for a second. I'm going to hit into this Giratina for 180 instead, or whatever the play is. It's really about passing. Deciding those. Yeah, you can do that. Just, I'm going to instant charge because my Rotom's still on the bench. Whatever. It's fine.
Yeah.
McCall for family.
Wait for them to do something.
Oh yeah.
We saw Gearheart pass a ton today.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Did it work? Did it end up working out for him? No. But sometimes it was the right play.
Yeah.
Did he do it a little too often? Maybe.
Yeah. There's playing from behind, and then there's not pushing advantage, and that's a whole different topic. I don't know. Someone out there will do a group coaching session for it at some point, right?
Yeah, or at least go back and watch the vlog for now until Azul puts out a YouTube video of it. Either way.
Yes.
All right, what do you think about wrapping it up?
I think it's a good idea because I want to go to bed. A prediction would be I think the meta is going to be too hostile for Charizard to win again. Like I said, I would still play Charizard. I don't think the hostile meta matters a whole lot. I think you'll still do well if you know how to play it. But that would be what I want to pick. I don't think Tina will do it 2 weeks in a row. So I am going to pick... What other decks are there? I refuse to pick Mew.
I was going to say, you're going
to pick Mew. I'm leaning towards Mew, actually. I don't want to. But I really think my conclusion is going to come to Mew. I'm picking Mew VMAX to win Charlotte Regionals. It is... Here it is. Judge Path will be the most consistent deck... Most consistent strategy, most consistent everything to get to top cut in this gigantic regional.
Yeah, I actually sadly have to agree with you.
Oh no. That means I'm wrong.
No. I'm a good metagamer. But I think I just think even seeing, you know, you saw a lot of the top end players already playing it last week.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the frequency pickup, maybe they cannibalize each other a little bit. But if I think it's just like you said, Judge Path, pretty good, and just having a draw engine, Judge Path, you have all your outs, and I think a lot of people have played it so much and know it, to pick it up and give it one last ride here as it's about to rotate. If it's not here, it's Knoxville. So,
yeah, I'm picking it for this one. I think that's correct. Grant, where can the people find you if they want more from you?
You can find me on Twitter at RealBooCK, one word. I'll have the numbers posted for the round times of Portland up there probably tomorrow. I gotta format it, but I try and keep track of those. I think that's the best thing I've been doing recently. My memes, I haven't done any good memes recently, so I don't know. But you can find me on Twitter, on Twitch. I might be in chat at boo_CK.
Myself, you can find me on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube at mellow_Magikarp. Be sure to rate and review the show. Check out the merch, doom-gaming.com. Use code LAKE for your first order. This has been another episode of the Lake of Rage podcast. Catch you all next week.